Well, you know that Peter and Paul were very different men, and yet they were able to perform in the same office. They were able to fulfill the same mission because they had the same spiritual goals, the same spiritual principles, the same spiritual objectives. That's what makes it work. Just like in marriage, men and women are very different people. And yet we can work together if we have the same goals and same principles and the same objectives. Marriage provides a context. It's not that we're just trying to be married. We're trying to use the vehicle of marriage in the rightful context or in the rightful way so that we can do what God wanted us to do, not just as husbands and wives, but more importantly, as Christians. That's really what we're after here. Steve Farrar, in his book Point Man, likens the marriage to the cockpit of a 747. You've got the pilot, you've got the co-pilot. The authority of the pilot is not in jeopardy by the presence of the co-pilot, but neither is he expected to fly the plane alone. Each relies on the other for help and support and guidance and making sure that we got all the switches turned right way and all the buttons pushed and everything's going so that this plane can take off the ground and fly. And for the marriage relationship to work, the husband needs to share that same kind of perspective. My wife is not my competitor. She is not a challenge to my authority. She is not someone who's in the way. She is my help. She is the one who works with me so that we can take this thing called marriage and fly it the way it was supposed to be. And that's a good way to look at that if that analogy works for you. But in a marriage in particular, unlike the whole pilot, co-pilot thing, the husband needs to understand his partner. And that goes for both, but we're just simply dealing with the husbands right now. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, that's exactly what Peter's talking about. Husbands, in the same way, and we'll talk about the same way thing in a minute, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. This is, again, not merely apostolic advice. Peter's not simply saying, wouldn't it be nice if we could all just do this, but if you don't, it's okay too. No, it's not okay. This is God's expectation for Christian husbands. It has a far-reaching impact as well, because how this is handled is going to impact your children, and it's going to carry over, that impact will carry over into their lives and their marriages and their children and perpetuate either for good or bad, depending on the decisions that you make right now. You say, well, my children are grown, I'm beyond that. Okay, it's going to affect your grandchildren as well. Or maybe someone else's children. I mean, we've got to take that into consideration here, the influence that we have. It's not just about ourselves, and it's not just about husband and wife. It's about those who are watching us as well. So the instruction here is not to command or belittle or intimidate or ignore your wives, but to live with them in an understanding way. It's also not to put up with your wives, endure their behavior with gritted teeth, criticize everything they do, but rather to live with them in an understanding way. And that's not an easy task. And partly because men sometimes are thick-headed and insensitive. And sometimes women are not easy to live with either. Notice I'm really delicate when I come to the women there, because I can say stuff about men. Someone said this evening already, are you going to talk about the wives in the same way you did the husbands? And I pretty much said no. I know better than that. A husband may be thinking to himself, 1 Peter 3:7 says, understand my wife. How is that possible? And that's a good point. I think it's impossible to understand women completely. There's something mysterious, incomprehensible, perhaps unfathomable about women. I'm not sure that women even understand themselves in the way that they think we should understand them. Men have a hard enough time understanding our own selves rather than try to be experts at women. So just keep that in mind here. Sometimes husbands do beat their brains out trying to understand their wives, like trying to understand quantum physics, okay? Now, curiously, I do have a chalkboard rendition of the actual formula for trying to understand women. And you can see it's rather complex. Now, I'm not going to tell you who sent me this, but it's one of our elders whose name starts with J. So anyway, now that's just to be funny there. But thankfully, this is not what Peter said. What he didn't say was, understand women. What he did say was, understand them in an, or live with them rather, in an understanding way. So he's talking about the manner, not with flawless insight, not with perfect knowledge, but in a manner that is understanding, if you will. The King James Version says, dwell with them according to knowledge. And I really think that that hits on the core of what is being said here, that knowledge part of understanding how to dwell with them, not with perfect knowledge about how women work, because I don't think any of us will ever get there, but we can have a knowledge about how to live with women in a certain manner. That any man can do if he just puts his mind to it and it remains open-minded and puts a little effort into what he's doing. How can I coexist with this woman that I have married? So not perfect knowledge, we're not capable of that, but according to what a person ought to know. You say, well, where do I get that information? Well, Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25 and following, we've talked about that a little bit. There's a passage there. There's other passages as well in Scripture. I realize Scripture doesn't offer an enormous amount of information specific to husbandry, if you will. Okay, that is how to be a husband and how to be a wife specifically for that. But we do have other people around us in the church. We have older men, we have older women who are experienced and seasoned at the workings of either gender there and what it is to be married and so on. And we can learn from their wisdom and learn from their experience. I think it was very valuable. Those who were at the last marriage powwow that we had here at the building, and Jack and Peggy were talking about some of their perspectives and some of their experiences here, going back a number of years that they have gone through. To me, that's extremely valuable because they've gone through things that I've not gone through. They've weathered times and seasons of life and things like that that I've not even experienced yet. I would like to go into those seasons with a little bit of knowledge, wouldn't you? Rather than just going into it cold turkey and having to suffer through without any knowledge. That's what we're talking about right here. But the fact is, you don't need to know every nuance or facet of something in order to use it, do you? I'm using a computer up here, which has a BIOS, basic input-output system, which I completely do not understand. It uses computer programming to work all that, and I do not understand it, and quite honestly, I could care less how the thing works. I just need it to function. When I push a button, I need it to do something, okay? So here I am using this vehicle, this computer. I don't have to understand computer programming in order to do that. I'm not saying treat your wives like a computer. What I'm simply saying is that there's only so much mastery of the person that you need in order to have a functional, understanding-like relationship with her. And I'm not saying that that should be limited either. I'm just simply saying that you can do a lot with even a little bit of knowledge if you just apply it in the right way. In 1 Peter 3, verse 7, it says there, as with someone weaker or a weaker vessel. I think this phrase has been very misunderstood, even abused and exploited. Men say things like, well, since she's weak, you know, we need to take care of her. Like she's some kind of inferior person. I don't know about you, but when I look at women, I don't see weak people. In fact, spiritually speaking, I think it's the women, more so than the men, typically, who are deeper in fellowship with God than the men usually are, for a variety of reasons I won't get into right now. But sometimes people think that this, what Peter is saying, well, she is physically, mentally, emotionally fragile, inferior, feeble, less capable, etc. And yet I'm seeing that women sometimes are much stronger than men. Maybe not physically, and that's not the point, but they're much stronger people than men. The context of Peter's statement there in 1 Peter 3, verse 7, has to do with authority and submission. If you look at the first six verses of 1 Peter 3, he's talking there about wives, be submissive to your husbands. And then he immediately says after that in verse 7, likewise. In essence, what he's saying is, husbands, be submissive to your wives in the sense that you treat her in an understanding way, like unto how Christ treats the church. Now, it sounds blasphemous to say that Jesus submits himself to the church, but he does submit to her needs, her being the bride of Christ. He does submit to her needs by taking care of them. He's open to them. He's attuned to those needs, and he fulfills those needs. And in doing so, that's exactly what Peter is talking about here. The church is not equal to Christ, and yet Christ takes care of the church. The woman, in regard to authority especially, is not equal to a man's authority. We've discussed this, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3, and etc. And yet, she is not an inferior person either. What Peter is saying here, in essence, is understand the balance here. Husbands, you have a leadership role in the marriage, and the wife is to support that role in her submission. Treat her rightly in her role as that submissive party. But at the same time, when it comes to understanding her as a fellow Christian, she is a fellow heir with you. She is not an inferior person. She is not weak as a person. It's not like that. Treat her as a fellow human, a spiritual sister in Christ, as well as your wife. It doesn't mean that women are easily broken. It simply means they're of a different composition than men. And that means that they're going to handle things differently than men handle them. They're going to handle things from a different perspective, and they're going to have a different outlook. And in my opinion, that's why God puts men and women together in a relationship, so that when they're dealing with the troubles and the difficulties of life, and even in counseling and so on, it is good to have a couple look at a situation rather than just a man, because the guy's going to miss stuff. And quite frankly, the woman's going to miss stuff too. There's things that either one is going to miss, but when you put them together, it's like now you've got four eyes looking at this situation, and each one coming from their own perspective. And I know from experience, my wife picks up on things that I just don't see. Sometimes she'll say, "This is what I saw in this scenario," and I'm going, "Really? I never even picked up on that at all. I was going over here." And it wasn't that I was wrong, it's just that she saw something that I just wasn't even thinking of at all. This has happened more times than I'd like to say, actually. but that's the nature, that's the beauty of having two people working together in that relationship. So different does not mean an assignment of who is inferior or superior. It's not evaluative. It's descriptive of the roles that we have. In other words, we're not evaluating the person. We're describing the role that they have. It's a very different thing there. Two very different beasts, if you will. So when Peter says, in an understanding way, he implies that there's something to learn about the one whom you have married, or perhaps will marry. It's not enough that as a husband you live with her. Anybody can live with a woman. That's not really rocket science there. But Christ demands that we support her and care for her and cherish her. She is different than you. Let's look at a couple of these differences here in the next several points here. First of all, she wants to be loved by you, husband, and she needs you, husband, to regularly reassure her of that love with your words and with your deeds. In short, and I'm going to cover this point and expound on it in a later lesson, but in short, men want respect, women want to be loved. That is not exclusively true, because some men, of course, want to be loved and women want to be respected, but it helps us to understand some of the fundamental differences between the two sexes here. Men need to be admired, women need to be needed, if you can think about it that way. And I think this is generally true. There are always going to be exceptions, but it is generally true. And women want to not only be needed, they want to participate in a functioning relationship. That's important to women. Men, I know that you probably already knew this. This is not news to you necessarily, but I'm reminding you of what is important from a woman's perspective, as best as we can understand from what women have said about themselves. If you listen to what men and women talk about and how they talk, and again, this is not absolute on either side, but men talk about conquering things and subduing things and solving and tackling with you know, intelligence and ability, and they're thinkers and fixers. Women tend to talk about their husbands and their children and other people, and they focus about how they feel about their scenarios and their situations and how they're affected by that, as instead of how to fix things. I'm not saying women aren't thinkers and fixers. They are. They just think differently and they fix things differently than how men do. Men go in there and they, you know, want to say, how does this thing work and how can we get it going again? And women go in there and think about that and go, how does this make me feel? You know, and how can I relate to this thing here? Okay. And you can see where that can be very different. If a woman's looking at a water heater that's not functioning, she's maybe looking at this in the wrong way. A guy's looking at it like, we just got to get the wires fixed. But when a guy's looking at a relationship, he's probably thinking of it like a water heater. How can we just kind of do this and do that and, you know, get this thing all hooked up? And a woman's got a lot better perspective probably on that. I'm just being silly with the illustrations, but there's a kernel of truth to the nature of how we approach things here. That's really what I'm getting you to see. Men, their identity is usually tied to what they can provide or create or sustain or overcome. A man's success is often measured in tangible output or production or things. This is what I created. This is what I put together. This is what I did today at work. I made this. Okay? Women don't usually think like that. I'm not saying they don't ever think like that, but they think differently. Women tend to be tying their identity to the people that they love, and especially at home. They don't measure things in terms of success, but rather in terms of fulfillment and in terms of emotional reward and intimacy. Instead of a woman saying, "This is what I created," and presenting a thing to you, they'll look at their family and say, "This is what I'm a part of. This is whom I'm associated. Here's my son. Here's my daughter. Here's my husband. These are people I'm proud of, and I care for them." Okay? I mean, it's just a different perspective. One's not better than the other. They're just different. And that's all we're recognizing is the difference here. Aubrey Anderlin, the author of Man of Steel and Velvet, says, "Men are not harmed by the lack of love to the same degree women are. A normal man, if denied love, usually throws himself into his work and finds compensating fulfillment there. Or he may concentrate on achievements outside of his work where he obtains admiration or praise, which is his greater need. He manages to survive and make a fairly adequate life for himself. Not so with a woman. If she is denied love, she will suffer as no man could comprehend." I think he's onto something. Okay? And again, generally speaking, these things are true. There are always going to be exceptions and anomalies, but we're talking about the general nature of men and women. Your wife wants to be special, men, to you, to her husband. She wants to be a queen, not just a woman in the picture. She wants to be the woman. And she can share your attention with other people as long as she remains the most loved of all of them. And she needs her husband's acceptance to know that. She needs to know that her husband knows her place in his heart. And for that reason, she cannot just be a roommate or a bed partner or a maid or a nanny. She needs to be the most special person, your soulmate, your intimate friend. And it is amazing, given this, that some men treat their kids or their car or their truck or their fishing pole or their guns better than they do their wives. They're just missing it. Man may polish his gun, but won't butter up his wife. May water his lawn, but he won't water his flower. May spend time with coworkers who are basically, in a lot of cases, strangers and acquaintances, but he won't spend time with his own soulmate. That's just not right. And that can be rectified. But you got to understand what the problem is before you can fix it, right? Christ treats his bride with ultimate respect and kindness and love, and he never tires giving her attention. He just doesn't find that boring or tedious or monotonous. He thrives on that, in fact, giving his bride attention. She needs allowance for her mistakes. She is human, and she is imperfect. And guys, be thankful for that, otherwise she never would have married you, probably. But even though she is human and imperfect, she is always redeemable. Think about that. She is always redeemable. Husbands are sometimes brutal. They may demand from their wife what they never demand of themselves. They may expect from her more than they expect of themselves, and they may be more critical of her than they are of themselves. And that's not right. And I know we're not going to fix the world here in a little lesson like this, because that stuff's still going to go on. Those abuses and injustices are still going to go on even after we know about them. But the fact is, if they're going on in your life, you have control to change that. And you really have a moral obligation to address that. Look over here in Colossians chapter 3, verse 12 and 13. This is a passage we have looked at before. To me, this passage is so key to understanding a good, healthy, wholesome relationship between a husband and wife. I know he's not talking about husbands and wives here. That's not the point. He's talking about Christian attitude. And this same Christian attitude is exactly what you should expect in two Christians who are married. Verse 12 of Colossians 3. So those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another, and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. If you've got a husband who is acting that way, he's going to be a great guy to be married to, right? I mean, that's really what a woman is looking for. And likewise, if your wife is that kind of person, husbands, aren't you looking for some woman like that? Wouldn't that be great if both parties acted like what Paul describes here in Colossians 3? So this applies to spouses. There's no better context to practice Christianity than in marriage. She needs you to understand her responsibility in the home. Sometimes this is misunderstood by both parties. You've heard the phrase, a woman's place is in the home. And that seems, by today's standards, cruel and chauvinistic, and I understand all that. But the fact is, a woman's focus needs to be in the home, regardless if she is a second income earner. The home needs to be her priority. If you look at 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 14, he's obviously dealing with young widows in that case, but he says of them, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach. And he says almost the exact same thing over in Titus chapter 2, verse 3 through 5, about non-widows, okay? Young women who are married. Encourage them to love their husbands, love their children, be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands so that the word of God will not be dishonored. And so what you're getting out of that message, if nothing else, that there is a role that women are to apply themselves to here, and that has to do with the home environment. A woman is not a housewife. I bristle at that when I hear that term, housewife. I know that a lot of us grew up with that term. I like homemaker so much better because that's what a woman is doing. She's not married to a house. She is creating a home environment. And that home environment is something that the husband needs to respect and needs to respect the work that is involved in putting together that home environment. And the wife needs to put her energies and concerns into making this home. And a homemaker, therefore, ought to create an environment and a refuge in which Christianity is promoted into the next generation, and I'm talking here about the children, and to provide a sanctuary for the family from the hostility and the carelessness and the wickedness of the world. A refuge, a sanctuary, a place where we can come together as family to get away from the world, not to bring the world inside and contaminate this refuge, but a sanctuary where God is honored, Christ is taught, and we are doing our best in our marriage and as parents and as children. We are doing our best to honor God in how we conduct ourselves. That's really what a woman's role is to do her part to create that. It's not left only to the woman there, but she does have a pivotal role in that. And if that's missing, it's hard to conceal. You've probably gone into people's homes where it feels cold and sterile, spiritually speaking. And you've probably gone into other people's homes where it's warm and friendly and just outpouring of love, and you feel comfortable there. It has nothing to do with the furniture so much. It has to do with the environment, okay? How the Lord is regarded. The wife needs to express her doubts and approval and anything troubling or upsetting her. She needs the opportunity to express those things. She needs to have voice, in essence. Women need to talk, and men cannot always appreciate that, but the talk cannot always be useless and superficial. Here's a quote from another book that we just talked about recently. We talk to our spouses, but our communication may be stunted and mundane. We talk about the kids, getting the car's tires rotated, fixing the leaky faucet, getting our taxes done, and dinner plans, but we rarely talk about our hearts. We sit down to coffee with friends, but we end up talking about silly, banal topics, or maybe we slide into criticism, gossip, and character assassination. After all, this is an easy, if not strangely gratifying, thing to do. Yet we may rarely sit down with someone and truly honestly and unguardedly share our heart. We just don't trust people enough to do this. Maybe we don't trust ourselves. If you're talking about superficial things all the time with your wife, it may be because your wife doesn't trust you with deeper things. It may be because you have shown that you don't trust her. Maybe neither one of you trust each other. So it's a trust issue. The level of depth of conversation. Remember the communication lesson we had? It's a trust issue. Your wife needs the freedom to say anything without you, the husband, trying to limit or censor or belittle or solve necessarily the problem. She just needs you to listen up front. That doesn't mean that you can't offer solutions. I'll talk about that in a later lesson. But it does mean that you need to listen up front, and you need to respond in some way, and that response needs to be meaningful and intimate dialogue. There's nothing worse than you trying to pour out your heart to someone, your wife or your husband especially, and you get almost nothing in response. It's not just aggravating, it's really demeaning. So think about Christ. He lets his bride speak always and say anything through prayer, and he listens. And he responds, and he acts upon what is said. She needs sympathy when she suffers. She needs to know that her husband will show her compassion. We're not just talking about physical pain here, because women can hurt and suffer differently than men, even with emotional pain. And it's not necessarily that we men understand fully what they're going through. It's not necessarily that we understand the nature of that pain, but rather that we be sensitive and compassionate. Just like we want, the attention and the compassion when we're not whole or complete. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 26, it says there, when one member suffers, all members suffer. When one member rejoices, everyone rejoices. If your wife's suffering, then suffer with her. And if she's rejoicing, rejoice with her. That's what Christians are supposed to do. Your wife is not just a wife. She's a member of the body, and she's a soulmate to you. Treat her with that kind of respect. In Proverbs 19, verse 14, a house and wealth are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. If you regard your wife as a gift, as a priceless blessing and a gift, not something to own, but someone to live with and to appreciate and to enjoy, things are going to go a whole lot differently for you than if you treat her like chattel or a piece of property or some kind of possession like women have been treated through most of history. We're supposed to have learned so much through the gospel and through Christ dealing with his wife. We're supposed to have learned from that. And so it requires a husband then to be sacrificial in nature and consciously attentive to her needs and to live with her with knowledge and compassion. In other words, in an understanding way. How we regard our wife has a direct impact on how we have a relationship with God. Peter ends 1 Peter 3, verse 7, saying that if you don't treat your wife rightly, if I can paraphrase, then God's not going to listen to your prayers. Think about the impact of that. Your prayers may be hindered because you're not treating your wife right. And it's not because you can't treat your wife rightly, it's because you've chosen not to, and that can change if indeed that's you. How many men might think that they find favor with God and yet refuse to live with their wife in an understanding way? Remember what we said at the end of this morning's lesson. It's not so much about the marriage is not so much about your relationship with your wife as much as it is really your relationship with Christ himself. Because that's really what the final analysis comes out to. So, there we have it. Those are our lessons dealing with husbands. Loving your wives in an understanding way. Next week we'll talk about wives. Respect your husbands. And then next Sunday night we'll talk about specifically love and respect. And that, those two things together. I want to say some things about that. If you're subject to our invitation, because now we offer, as a matter of convenience, and yes, part of this congregation's tradition here, we offer an invitation. If you need to come forward and respond to the lesson in any way, then this would be the time to do so. As we stand in